Welcome to this old video series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. We are starting a new, very, very short survey study on an Old Testament book that it's a good chance that you haven't been in for quite a while.
Yeah, right.
Book of?
Ezra.
Ezra.
And I tell you why it's perfect. 2 weeks. So you get the excitement of the beginning of a series, you get the excitement of the end of the series, and we cut the middle out. Oh, it's great. It's great. All right, so here's the deal. Here's the deal with Ezra. We could spend 2 weeks on background.
Yeah.
There's so much going on here. I really did my best to consolidate it, but it may not seem that way, and I apologize.
So the book of Judges lasts, let's say, about 300 years, between 1300 and 1000 or so, 11 to 14. Yeah, about 1300 to 1000 BC, okay? Then we have Saul and David and Solomon, and then you have all these kings that last for about 400-ish years.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And this is when there's a dive in the whole morality. And God keeps telling them, you need to act right, or I'm going to take you out of the land.
Yep.
And of course, they didn't listen to God.
And that covers all the prophets.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
So what do we have left? Yeah. Right?
Well, so what happened is King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, he came in three separate times and attacked Jerusalem. And the third time, he wiped out everybody. Yeah. And that was really... So now there's nobody left in Jerusalem, right? Because people were either killed or they were taken prisoners.
Yeah. And that's just Jerusalem. That's not Jerusalem. The entire country, right?
Right.
I mean, there's still some people.
But it really wiped out Israel.
Yeah, as a nation.
Yeah, definitely as a nation and as a political force, too.
Yeah. There were people there, but they were the poorest of the poor, just sort of scraping by.
All the walls were torn down. Everything was decimated. Anything of value was taken.
Yeah.
So the good news is a remnant is now in Babylon.
Yep.
And they're in exile. And in 70 years later, they got to go back.
Right.
And Ezra is part of the story. And there's really kind of three parts to it, right? Because there were three times when people brought back from Babylon to Jerusalem people. And the first one was the Z guy, right?
Yep, yeah,
Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel brought back about 50,000 exiles. Mm-hmm. I mean, think of that, 50,000 people coming back to a place they have not inhabited for 70 years.
And so let's say that there's going to be 70 years around after Daniel was taken captive. So Daniel was in the first, because there are also three captivities.
Yeah.
Right? So Daniel was taken
interesting,
captive.
Interesting, three of each. Yeah.
And then Ezekiel was taken captive the second time. And then Jeremiah, he never actually made it all the way there, but it's sort of Jeremiah's story was in the third one. Now, 70 years after Daniel, you got Zerubbabel. When Babylon is overthrown by Persia, right? Yeah. So Cyrus comes in and says, I'm letting you go back, but it was a very limited thing that they were supposed to do, right?
Right, right. And we'll see this in the chapters. All right, just trying to give an overview here. But then Ezra comes back and he has a job, and then there's Nehemiah, right? That comes back at the end, and all these guys are coming back at different times. These are all books in the Old Testament. They all fit together, and it's kind of amazing. And it's a huge story.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. And they're all three of those, Zerubbabel, Ezra, and Nehemiah, are found in the two books of Ezra and Nehemiah, which in the Hebrew Bible, not our English Bible, but in the Hebrew Bible, Ezra and Nehemiah was actually considered one book.
They didn't, which makes a lot of sense.
Because it's the book of the return, basically.
Right.
The returns.
Right. So the nation of Israel has been in Babylon for 70 years. Mm-hmm. And during that 70 years, Persia has taken over and defeated Babylon. Mm-hmm. So I always thought that everybody got up and moved to Persia. But those people would have stayed in Babylon.
Right.
It was just under Persian rule at the time.
Right.
Yeah. You could have told me that before. You probably did, actually. And then... a king by the name of Cyrus comes in, and a really interesting thing happens with Cyrus is he gives a proclamation, and that proclamation is to go back and rebuild the temple and God's people, the Israelites, can go back with them, what do you call them, residents, foreigners, as they would have been to Babylon or Persia. And then the third thing, which is really unbelievable to me, is that the nation of Persia, the people of Babylon, are going to supply the money for them to go back.
Yeah.
So out of their households, they're going to give money to these people who are leaving to go back, and enough to fund the building of the temple.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me.
And everything that Nebuchadnezzar took out of the temple,
they're giving back.
Right. They're giving back. He's like, and here's why. Because God made a prophecy through Isaiah about 200-300 years earlier that named Cyrus by name.
Yeah.
And God said, I am going to appoint, now this is interesting, I'm going to appoint my servant Cyrus, and he called him my anointed one, my Mashiach, my Messiah.
Yeah.
Not, he wasn't going to be like the Jewish Messiah, right, the Messiah, but he was the one who was anointed, appointed for this task of getting the Jewish people back into their land to start this process of rebuilding. Yeah.
So I definitely see Cyrus getting excited about that, right? My name is in here. I am going to do that. But there was also a political benefit to have Israel being rebuilt.
Too, yeah, of course.
A tax base.
Yeah.
So I think in a lot of these places where we see Persia stepping in, there is definitely a political reason for it too.
Yeah.
But it coincides with what the Israelites needed too, which is awesome.
Which is really an interesting way as you think of, you know, how does God, you know, move kings and how does God do that stuff as far as world events with Nebuchadnezzar, with Cyrus, with all these guys. It's not that he, you know, Pharaoh even, it's not that he was making them do things because, you know, I said you have to do this. He's saying what God is doing is, this is what I want accomplished. And you may have some goals that you're going, you know, it's sort of like, right, a win-win almost scenario.
Yeah, right.
You're going to do this because you want to. Now, it's going to fulfill my plan, but I'm not making you do this. I'm, you know, whether it's good or bad, you're doing it willingly.
Right.
And I'm bigger than you are, so I'm going to make it turn out the way I want anyway. But it's your, you know, your thing. So Cyrus, yeah, building a tax base. Nebuchadnezzar, taking the country out. Pharaoh doesn't want to let them go. Now he does let them go, you know, the whole thing. That is all done right out of their own volition, right out of their own,
right,
their own thing.
Yeah. Okay, so I got a question for you here. In verse 5, it says, the leaders of Judah and Benjamin came back.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that makes a lot of sense, because if we go back to Jerusalem before they went into exile, Assyria came into the northern kingdom and wiped them out.
Yep.
And what we had left was Judah and Benjamin, right?
Yep.
Two out of the 13 tribes.
Yep.
So it makes sense that they were the remnants that went into Babylon.
Babylon, right.
So they would be the remnants that came out.
Yeah.
So is that right in thinking that all or most of the remnants were either from Judah and or Benjamin?
Well, the other tribes are still represented because Babylon overthrew Assyria, which assimilated them into Babylon, and now Persia's assimilated all of them.
So that's still how they got.
Yeah, but
or may have gotten,
they're going back to Jerusalem, and Jerusalem is in the area of Judah, and so when you go back for that region, for that tribal area, those are the people who are going to be most likely to go back to that area, are going to be the people who were there, they were from there originally, and the Levites. It's not just Judah and Benjamin, but it's also the Levites, because that's the priestly tribe. Doesn't do any good to have a temple rebuilt if you don't have people to run it.
Right.
So they had to, so Ezra was a priest and a scribe, and as he's recording, now this is long before he was even born, when Zerubbabel went back. But when he's recording this, he's focusing on the temple work, not necessarily the national work. Nehemiah will take care of that, and he'll, you know, talk more about tribes and everything. That wasn't what Zerubbabel was really interested in. It wasn't what Ezra was really interested in, because that's not what they were allowed to do. They weren't back there to rebuild the nation. Cyrus allowed him to go back to rebuild the temple, and we'll start there. So the focus really is Judah, Benjamin, and Levi.
Okay. So still in chapter one, they list some inventory and some pieces that, that brought back. And in verse nine, they said the total was 5,400 pieces. But if you get out your little calculator and do the math there, the items that they have listed were incredibly short from that. But it seems like the items they had listed were maybe the big items. And they just didn't list everything because the 5,400 probably would have been counting every little detail.
Fork and spoon and all the stuff that's...
We're not going to list how many forks there are.
And it looks, most of these are, you know, they look to be round numbers too. You know, I don't know that this is supposed to be like a very detailed... Now, I'm sure they had a detailed inventory, but...
Well, and Ezra later does something very similar, and he seems to have a very detailed list.
And again, so this Ezra's not even alive. He's recording this after the fact. He's not even alive yet, so he's working off of, for him, you know, older documents or, you know, recollections or something.
Chapter 2 gives a list of names of people who came back. Zerubbabel's in there. He becomes, I don't know, governor's probably a good term for him when he comes back. We'll see the name in there of Mordecai. And as we read in Esther, a relative of Esther's, but it's a different Mordecai.
Probably a different Mordecai, although it's interesting if you read some... you know, outside the scriptures, if you read some Persian stuff, Persian history, it seems like Mordecai probably became sort of like a liaison between Jerusalem and Persia, between Israel and Persia, after the events of Esther happened. You know, he could speak both languages, he, you know, and he was high enough in the king's court in Artaxerxes there that he was able to actually go back and forth probably.
So they also list a bunch of family names, and ideally these families would have gone back to the towns that they started started in, and these people also gave generously when they got back, they need to fund the treasury, they need to fund you know, even though they need to restart building the nation, you know, even though that's not a goal, that's that has to be a goal.
I would say, you know, the temptation is going to be to read through this chapter very, very quickly. It's a list of names. There's some pretty interesting tidbits in there that I would not gloss over. They're really interesting.
There's about 50,000 people that come
Too. And they're not all named. It's
You know, we don't have to be a test.
We don't have 50,000
I got 40,000
I couldn't remember that last one.
Chapter 3, one of the first things they do is rebuild the altar. Because it was easiest?
Well, because it's the seventh month. And on the Jewish calendar, the seventh month is Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement. You've got Rosh Hashanah, which is the new year. And you've got the Feast of Tabernacles. But with Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, they've got these sacrifices that they have to do. So if they're going to celebrate this for the first time in the land, they've got to get the altar up and running, even if they don't have everything else.
One of the things I notice in here is that the Israelites were in terror of the local people. I mean, using the word terror in there. So if you think about it, they were not in the land for 70 years. All of a sudden they show up and say, this is my land. It's taking the land over again. Coming into the promised land almost like the first time. But this was their first step of them returning back to their former lives. They talk about, there's a bunch of dates that are in here all over the place. I'll try to skim over those. Preparation started for rebuilding the temple. They started gathering more money. The Levites that were older than 19 were put in charge of rebuilding the temple, which makes sense.
Because that goes back to the Mosaic law where a Levite had to be at least 20 years old. Before they could work in the temple service, or in Moses' case, the tabernacle service.
And all the people that were present, I mean, they were singing, they were shouting, they were crying. You know, this is happening, right, in their lifetime. And, you know, it's like we're on a high note. And, of course,
Well, it's interesting because it says that some people were old enough that they remembered Solomon's temple before Nebuchadnezzar, you know, took it over. So now they're looking at this, and it says that they were crying so loudly while the younger ones were celebrating so loudly you couldn't tell the difference. And so there was, you know, it was bittersweet for depending on, you know, where you were in the age group at that point.
So in chapter 4 we see that there's a number of Persian kings listed. So these events may have started under Cyrus, but it continued for a bunch of years, right? Yeah. So we're in the future now.
Yeah, we're going to jump forward a little bit, probably 15, 20 years, not super long. But there was, what we read in chapter 4 is that there's some opposition, and it put it on hold for, put the work, the temple work, on hold for about 15 years.
Yeah. So you come back to rebuild the temple, and now there is an opposing force that doesn't want the temple rebuilt.
Right.
And you got to figure, starting with the locals.
Yep.
And the locals came at it, I think, in two or three different ways. First, they said, hey, we'll help you rebuild the temple.
Yeah.
And that was seen as, we don't want them, we don't want you guys on our team.
Right.
Right. So there was a denial there.
Yeah.
And then the second was the local people started to discourage the people of Judah, to dishearten them. And it sounds like, really, that's all it took?
Yeah.
But it could certainly, that could certainly happen, right?
Yeah. And what's funny is if this sounds familiar to you, you see the exact same thing happening in Nehemiah when they're rebuilding the city. So it's not like, I thought there was some details that I'm remembering wrongly. No, it's the same thing quite a little bit later, you know, with Nehemiah,
yeah,
with the wall. They're doing yep, here. Well,
and they hired an advisor.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the advisor would do, but I don't think it's anything good.
Yeah, I know.
But to frustrate their plans.
Yep.
And it actually succeeded, right? And the work on the temple was halted.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the chapter happens 50 to 80 years after that. So we're back on a different time frame again? Or am I off again on my dates and times?
The problem is that the first five verses talk about from Cyrus to Darius, and then it ends with Darius again. But in the middle, this section that is written in Aramaic refers to Artaxerxes, and it's a known issue, and I'm not sure exactly. It makes sense, but it also doesn't make sense. It could be a naming thing. It could be because the letter was written in Aramaic instead of Hebrew. This is the second longest part of the Old Testament that's not written in Hebrew. The longest part is about four chapters of Daniel. This is the second longest part. It's written in Aramaic. And so that may have something to do with it, although you should be able to figure out names. But in the Persian structure, sometimes you have different levels. So it could be that Darius is actually the king who took over for Cyrus, but Artaxerxes is sort of like a lower, okay, but he's right over that area.
Right.
And so it didn't actually get to Darius, but Darius is where you get your time frame, but Artaxerxes was okay, who was actually the guy.
Okay.
So I think that's probably the best answer of why. I mean, I don't think he's jumping time frames here. I think it's during the time of Darius, and we can mark off those numbers. And I think that has to be the case because of how it ties into Haggai and Zechariah,
right,
in the next couple of chapters.
Okay. So you had brought up before while we were talking that at the end of chapter 4, it sure sounded like Haggai and Zechariah.
It specifically says that in the last verse of chapter 4, and it remained halted, the work on the temple, until the second year of the reign of King Darius of Persia. Well, when you look at Haggai and you look at Zechariah, it's during the second year of the reign of, you know, King Darius of Persia.
Yeah.
Well, you look at the very next verse,
right, there we
then the prophets
5
of Haggai and Zechariah prophesied concerning. And so I know you're reading in Ezra, but when you're reading Ezra 4 and 5 here, Zechariah is pretty long, but it's worth popping over to Haggai, also only two chapters. And just reading those very quickly, because that gives another perspective on this exact event right here.
And Haggai, out of all Old Testament, marks the time frame exact.
Very, very well. Yep, during this second year. The Haggai's ministry, his entire recorded ministry, happens during chapter 5 of Ezra.
Yeah, and that is starting on the temple work again.
Get back to it, because it's been on hold for 15 years. And Haggai comes along and God through, you know, why are you working on your houses instead of my house and you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, shouldn't we be working on God's house, right? Right, so Haggai and Zechariah, they prophesied. And that got, I think, the people excited again and Zerubbabel, and they started to rebuild the temple. But of course, there was pushback, right? We still had these locals here that knew if this temple, if the temple was built, that these locals were lost, right? There was no way that they could stay in the land. They were going to end up being kicked out. So they said things like, "Who gave you the authority to rebuild?" And then that brought in the Persian local governor, and he writes a letter back to King Cyrus and says, "Oh, sorry, to King Darius."
Yeah.
And references Cyrus and says, "Hey, do you have any information on this?"
Yeah.
So we actually end the first half of Ezra on a little bit of a cliffhanger, which is kind of cool. So now, I don't know that work was halted, but it definitely was slowed down while, you know, we checked back with the local government to see, you know, they want some direction on what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, they came to Zerubbabel, and in at least in the net here, it keeps referring to Jeshua, J-E-S-H-U-A. Haggai refers to him as Joshua. It's the same guy. He's the high priest at this time. Zerubbabel's the governor. And they say, "Who gave you the authority?" And Zerubbabel came back and said, "Well, Cyrus did." And so then they wrote a letter to Darius and said, "Can you look into this for us?" Right. And sort of cliffhanger. What's going to happen? Let the king send us a decision concerning this matter. You have to wait until next week to find out what happened in the rest of the...
I like these cliffhangers.
And we'll finish the whole thing next week. So, it's some really good stuff. You know, a lot of background that we have to do to bring us into this. But if you haven't been in Ezra for a while, which I assume you might not have been, take it slowly, read it carefully. There's some really good stuff in here, especially seeing God at work and some of the opposition that Israel honestly has been facing for 2,500 years.
Yeah,
you know, they were occupied by Persia at this point. They're going to be occupied by Greece and Rome, and you know, it's always been the case. So, all right, well. Hope you enjoyed it. Like and subscribe and do all those things. Share it with your friends and family. Send us your questions and comments. And we'll be back next time, not just to conclude, but to conclude the book of Ezra.
Bye, everybody.